Hey folks, I'm Daryl Frank, and you're listening to episode 3 of Frankly Speaking, People and Stories of the Seacoast. As always, I'm accompanied by my friend and producer, Jeff Robert. Welcome, Jeff, and thank you for allowing me to pull you away from opening weekend of the NFL.
Hey, everybody. I'm happy to be here.
All right, great. Even though it started Thursday, right?
Oh, yeah, it started Thursday.
There you go. Today's episode, and I have to say we are so honored and glad that we are in the presence of Paige Baronski. Those of you on the Seacoast know the family very well. Jason Baronski is her dad. Dawn Bilodeau is her mom. So very strong and deep ties to the Seacoast. And we're going to help her get her story out. I think it's an amazing ride. I think it's, dare I say, the perseverance without even being the first time talking to her, the perseverance that this young woman has is a testament to who she is. So with that, Paige, welcome.
Hi, thank you.
I do have to say we have mutual friends.
Yes.
Katie Sargent.
Yep.
One of my daughter's good best friend, I should say. They've been diaper best friends since since way back. When she found out I was doing a podcast, she specifically said, you have to get Paige on.
Aww.
Yeah. So I guess I'll tee it up this way.
Yeah.
And I think if some people know the story, I just want to kind of put it this way, because this is a feel-good story. Mm. This really is. And one thing that I picked up and watched, and you've been brutally honest with your story throughout.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the thing that impressed me the most is watching your video for Granite State Recovery. The smirk and the smile when you said, I'm an alumni.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, she's there.
Yeah.
You know? So let's talk about the beginning, I guess. The beginning of the video.
Okay.
Age 12.
Yep.
First drink.
Yes.
How did that come
It was
about?
Just my parents had an alcohol cabinet. I was having a friend sleep over, yeah, and we just wanted to experiment, see what it was like. And I thought it was absolutely disgusting. Of course, I was like, what is this? But yeah, then it just kept going from there. It was like, well, and I also have, you know, an older sister. So she was, what, 15 at the time? So that's the time where I feel like kids are starting to experiment anyways. So I was also kind of exposed to that as well. Not to place blame on anyone at all. I think my story would have turned out the same way regardless. But yeah, that's how that started. Just experimenting and trying something new.
Right. Do you remember what it was, what the drink was?
Oh, no, I have no idea. No idea.
But okay, so we go from there, and then, like I said, and folks, as you're listening, you may hear me struggle a little bit, but I'm looking at this for Paige to educate myself, Jeff, and for those of you listening, because, you know, it's one of these stories that Paige and her family endured and learned about as they went through it. And it's one of those things where, as parents, you know what's out there, but we kind of dance around it.
Mm-hmm.
So how did we get from 12 years old, first drink, to maybe even deeper into that? Like in high, because what I ventured from listening to Dad, he noticed you weren't his page, mm-hmm, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. So from that first drink, I would say it just went on to be like, you know, you go to high school, there's parties, that's like the cool thing to do, and everyone's drinking, so you want to fit in, you're drinking, everyone's drinking, and then it progressed to drugs at parties, and like a normal person would say no to that, I feel like, especially when the hard stuff comes out. But I was like intrigued by it again, like wanting to experiment. I'm like, how is this going to make me feel? And I think with getting sober, I learned that I was never okay with who I was without the drugs and the alcohol. They made me comfortable. They made me feel more confident. And it was always like, what can I put in me to make me feel better about myself, to make me fit in, and just kind of to get outside of myself that I was uncomfortable with.
Wow. in people, and I'm going to go back to the video because this is your story.
Mm-hmm.
Mom and dad, very supportive,
mm-hmm.
great upbringing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just something that kind of triggered that 12, 10. And you're absolutely right. Jeff and I were talking about the high school stuff. It's like,
yeah.
Saturday night was
exactly.
party night.
And it's like, what party am I going to get invited to? Who's going to be there? And I think looking back, the problem was like my friends were all drinking as well, but they weren't drinking to get drunk. Like they were drinking on more of like a social aspect. Like I was drinking to feel like that feeling. I was doing the drugs to feel that, like I was just wanting to like numb everything. And again, I don't know where it came from. I had a pretty normal upbringing.
Yeah.
You know, my sister didn't turn out to be a alcoholic or a drug addict. So like mm-hmm. it was something within me, but yeah, something inside. I was uncomfortable with myself and I wanted to feel something and fit in and yeah.
Wow.
Took it a little too far.
Wow.
I know you say that now, and obviously you've learned that now, but mm-hmm. Did you ever realize that at all while you were in like the midst of it? Like wherever point where you were like, oh, there's a difference between me drinking and my friends drinking.
Like, no, I feel like I didn't really ever see it. Looking back, I don't know how I didn't see it, but yeah, no. Because some of them drank similar to me. You know, I had like two really close ones who also would get really intoxicated like myself mm-hmm. and who would try the drugs like myself.
Yeah.
So I think maybe that's what I held on to, that like, oh, I'm not that bad because they're doing it.
Yeah.
Especially at such a young age, too. I feel like you're so naive. You feel like you're invincible. Like,
and high school's a tough time.
Yeah.
Let's face it. High school's a tough time. I mean, you were probably going to Portsmouth at the time. I don't know what was in your graduating class, but mine was 400. It can be intimidating.
Yeah. It got really bad towards the end of my junior year, beginning of my senior year. That's when like the hard stuff started coming in. Like,
right.
I think, I don't even know what it was. It was an opiate and it was at a party. That was the first time I did that. That was like when cocaine was being experimented with as well.
Is that when dad made a reference in his video was the trouble at school?
Yeah, probably.
Okay.
I was, yeah. Beginning of my senior year was terrible. I was always late. I was not going. I was doing drugs in school.
Right.
I never got caught doing drugs in school, but I was doing drugs in school. So leaving school early. And yeah, I don't even know how I graduated, to be quite honest with you. Mm-hmm. My entire senior year, I was doing heroin. Like that's when I had fully started. I was going to Haverhill, Massachusetts, like every single day.
Right.
So
I'm going to be naive and ask yeah. a question here too, because I don't know, like I said, I don't know what I don't know. And I'm going to sound like such an old guy right now. Can you take that in a powder form as well as a needle? Because I think there's
yes.
some perception out there that...
Yeah, so at start, I was so against the needles in the
okay.
beginning. Yeah, I just snorted it. But yeah, that's when the full addiction happened senior year. I was dating someone who was also a heroin addict. And that's kind of how it went into full swing. He ended up getting arrested, going to jail. So that was my first time like getting sober,
right.
in quotation, or,
right.
you know, sober, because I had just stopped doing heroin when he was gone.
Yeah.
So I had my first experience of being dope sick. Do you know what that is?
Talk to me. I think I may know, but.
So withdrawing from the heroin, which is just like vomiting,
yeah.
like diarrhea, like same, like the worst
is
stomach
sweat
ache,
and chills.
Sweat and chills. Your
oh,
legs
age,
are uncontrollable,
wow.
like when you're sleeping, restless legs.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the sickest I've ever been in my life.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
So is that what somebody's going to go into a program?
Yes.
And someone says they got to detox first. Is that what that person has to go through before they can get accepted to a program?
Yes.
Okay. All right. I have a nephew. He's clean.
Mm-hmm.
Very similar story, except I think his came post.
Mm-hmm.
And it was multiple attempts
mm-hmm.
at sobriety that, thank God, great kid. He's been clean for multiple years now.
That's
so,
awesome.
Yeah. So, okay. So, dope yeah. sick.
Yes. That's the
boyfriend's
term for
in
it.
Jail.
Yep.
Dope sick.
And then I like, you know, got over that. It was tough. It takes like 5 days. And then I was just like, I'm just not going to do it anymore, but I'm still going to drink and smoke weed and all that stuff. And then I met someone else. And my thing that I realized as a recovered alcoholic is that I can't pick and choose what drugs I do, right? So like I thought I was fine just drinking alcohol and not doing heroin. And then that quickly led me right back to where I started.
Oh, okay.
Driving down to Haverhill to pick up drugs.
Yeah. Was there one moment that kind of struck you as, because in the video I saw or I listened, and there was the first attempt at recovery.
Yeah.
In Florida.
Yep.
You called it the Ritz-Carlton?
That was the first, it was a really, that was another thing that I like had to control where I went because I don't think I was ready and I wanted it in my terms. But yes, that was my first attempt in Florida.
Yeah.
And that's when I had gotten arrested. I think it was for like a dirty needle or something. And that was my choice, was Florida.
So if I can ask for a second.
Yeah.
Graduate from high school.
Mm-hmm.
What were you doing for work at the time? Well, were you working mm-hmm. multiple jobs or were you, because I mean I had
like a little high school job at Aroma Joe's.
Yeah.
And I was working that through graduation, through getting high. And then I ended up like getting fired from there because of
everything.
Everything.
Yeah.
And then after that, I would just have either not have a job or I would have like hostess jobs at different places, and again they all ended because of me doing drugs. So
then no one was going to stop you, is that that's what
oh,
I'm
no,
that,
no just, one was going to stop me
just this short time.
Yeah,
there's a force within you that you're going to do what you're going to want to do.
Yes, and harm whoever I need to in the way, which I obviously caused immense pain to my family. But nothing was stopping me.
Yeah. So you're knocking on Florida's door, if you will.
Yeah.
So you go through that program.
Yes.
Were you changed coming out of there or was it just?
No.
Okay.
So I was, forced in there. I wasn't ready.
Yeah.
Which is a huge thing with alcoholics. Like they need to be ready. I don't think there's forcing anyone into anything. From the day I got there, I was like already planning because I was detoxing. So I was like hiding my Suboxone in the cheek of my mouth, which is a medication they give you to help you with being dope sick.
Okay.
So it, helps you wean off. So I was like hiding that so I could save it for later to like get high with it.
So very medicine they give you.
You can get high with,
You can get high with, okay.
If you abuse it,
I told you I'm old. Yeah, I'm an old guy.
But that's how it was from the moment I was in detox. That's exactly what was on my mind.
Wow, okay.
So I went through that program, which I forget the type, but it wasn't like 12-step based or anything like through Alcoholics Anonymous. Yeah. So basically they just told me like, you need to not go to places that might trigger you into wanting to get high. You need to not hang around with some people who might trigger you into, that's what I was taught. So there, that's what I gained from there. So in my mind, I'm like, oh, well, I have to stay in Florida then. I can't go back to New Hampshire because all my triggers are up there.
Right.
And my parents came down. They moved me to a sober living down there. And I think the literal day that I got out of the rehab, like the 30-day program, I had one of those Suboxones that I saved from detox and I like put it in my mouth and got high.
Oh,
I had just finished like the 30-day program. I was moving into a sober house and you know what I mean? Like I was not
like you
there.
Said, you weren't ready. Yeah. So how does Florida end? Because you're into sober living.
Yeah, Florida ends terribly. I started getting high down there. I was living in a hotel room. My grandparents ended up flying down because I had my car with me.
Yeah.
They flew down and drove me back home.
How old are you at this time?
19.
Okay, so you're coming back home.
Yeah.
Were your folks in your support system aware of
the
step back?
Yeah.
After that? Okay.
I don't think that was like the longest time I think I went without talking to my dad. He was beside himself. Not to mention, I don't this rehab that I went to, my parents had to pay out of pocket for. My insurance didn't cover it.
Right.
And it was, I don't know if they want me to say this, but $20,000 out of pocket.
Yeah. I know somebody that's very similar. I knew the costs of something similar to what you went through.
Yeah.
Or went to.
So like crazy. I can imagine that my dad was irate because that's a lot of money to just be like.
That was a 30-day, was that like 30 a 30-day program?
Yeah. So the $20,000 there, and then he was also paying for my sober living out of pocket, which I don't remember how much that was, but obviously not cheap. Like treatment isn't cheap.
Right, right. So you're on your way back, 19. Grandparents are driving you back.
Mm-hmm.
How many attempts before we got to Granite State?
Two inpatient attempts and two outpatient attempts, I believe.
Okay. What's the next attempt?
So first, forced into the first treatment center, came home. It was a similar thing. I said I was going to be sober. I started going to meetings, but I was still, I don't know at the time what I was taking for medication, but like I was probably taking like Xanax or Ativan, something like that. But I wasn't doing heroin. I don't think I was drinking, but I was like doing these other little things on the side.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said before, that always leads me right back to what I really want, which is the heroin. And it did.
Right.
And then again, I ended up in some trouble with being arrested or something. And same thing as before, you have to go to treatment. This is your only option. And then so I went to my second treatment center, which was in Keene, New Hampshire.
Is this still a situation where you're still in control? In a sense of you're not willing to give up control, go into the second one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I went in with a plan again. Like, I just knew I was in trouble and I knew I wanted to get out of trouble.
Yeah.
When I knew to do that, I had to please my parents and my family.
Right.
So the night before I left, my aunt was the one who brought me. Because again, I think my dad at this point wasn't speaking to me again. He was very angry, rightfully so. Tired.
Worried at the same time.
Yeah. All of it.
Yeah.
So I was laying in bed with my aunt. She was getting ready to bring me and she was like, "Where do you see yourself in 5 years?" And I was like, "I have absolutely no idea. Like I can't even see myself being alive in 5 years." Like,
and how long you coming back as 19 from Florida? Now you're going into the second attempt at Keene. What was the gap between the two? About a year, so you're about 20?
No. My gaps between the two were a few months. I was...
Wow, okay.
So I think I went to Florida in October. I stayed till Florida till December. I came home. It was like middle of December. And I was back in treatment in Keene in February. So 2 months.
Right. Yeah.
And same thing. Again, I went into Keene with a plan. I snuck my phone in. I was literally trying to have drugs delivered to me at this rehab. Like, my mind was in no way wanting to get sober. I think towards the end of it, I had some clarity and I did kind of want it, but I was also still taking medications that were altering my mind, like prescribed by a doctor, but it was Adderall, which, in my opinion, from the drugs that I've used, Adderall and cocaine are really similar.
And it's prescribed.
Yeah, and it's prescribed.
Yeah.
But my mind's being altered by this drug that I'm prescribed. So I didn't have the full clarity. Like I had an idea in my mind that like I maybe wanted to be sober, but again, it was being blocked by these drugs that I was prescribed this time. So I left that rehab and I went to live with my dad and...
So he came around...
Yes, while I was at this rehab in Keene. I had... left to live with my dad. I was going to meetings. I was working, again, just a job at Aroma Joe's. And going to meetings, I was learning. I was meeting new people. It was really great. But again, I was taking that medication that's prescribed that makes me feel, you know, like not myself.
Mm-hmm.
So it ended the same way it always does when I'm not
always
actually
did.
Sober. Yeah. And I started using drugs again.
Yeah.
The hard stuff.
Yeah.
Which led to, you know, I lost my job. I was at this point just like not caring at all. I was giving my family like heart attacks every day.
Mm-hmm.
And The end was really messy and blurry for me, and I don't remember a lot at all. I remember my dad was like trying to like keep me on lockdown essentially at his house. And I think I was just like still sneaking out and finding ways to get money and get drugs. And I don't even know what the final straw was or like why I agreed to go to treatment. I think maybe I had that feeling finally of like enough is enough. Like I can't keep doing this. I mean, my life had turned into Groundhog Day, like every day, right? Like I would wake up in the morning sick because I needed drugs. Mm-hmm. I would figure out a plan to get the drugs. Like who was I going to steal from? What was I going to do? What was I going to pawn? How was I going to get money to get the drugs and to feel okay? I wasn't even getting high anymore. I think that was the problem. I was literally just doing it to not be sick.
So is that, because you always hear this, the phrase, whether it's in movies or it's romanticized, the chasing the high. Is that what, is that what that's kind of called, or am I completely off base there?
No, I don't think so. I would say I wasn't, at that point, I wasn't chasing a high. I was like literally just wanted to be okay.
Yeah.
Because I like wasn't even getting high anymore. My body was like so used to
it. So numb to it.
Yeah, that it was like.
Yeah. So we're out of Keene.
Yep.
Where you're at that point now where it's almost like you're starting to say, okay, I need.
Yeah.
Change. I need to get Paige back.
Yeah.
What kind of time frame were we talking from the end of that Keene piece to maybe your first attempt at giving up control? Is that not control? You know what I'm saying?
I would say it was like
get control.
It was like like 6 months from Keene till when I went to Green Mountain.
Okay, so Green Mountain was probably in the fall sometime then.
It was August, end of August.
Nice. Okay. Yeah.
So anyone who does drugs will understand this, but when I had finally said that like I would go to treatment and it was like agreed upon, we found a place that my dad was going to bring me to. It's like, okay, so now in my mind, I know. So now I'm chasing the high, right? Like I want to get so high before I go into this place because I'm right. Like thinking it's going to be my last time. So that was just like the week prior, and the day my dad brought me down to this, it was in the Cape. It was a detox that I was going to and then a treatment center after. And I feel so bad looking back and like thinking about what he was going through. He finally had gotten me to this place. We drove down there to the Cape and we go in and they had not looked at my insurance or something. It like there was a misunderstanding and they were like, her insurance isn't covered. She can't come here. Unless you want to pay like all this money, which again, I told you he paid a lot in Florida. Mm-hmm. So I think he was wanting to use insurance this time. So we drove back home.
Yeah.
And I'm sure my dad was so scared, so angry.
Yeah.
You know,
I imagine it was a quiet ride home.
Yeah. And I believe that I reached out to someone and I told them what had happened. And I was like someone in the recovery community. And I was like, they don't take my insurance. And I think she sent me a link to Green Mountain and was like, apply here. And I did on the ride home in the back of the car. I think, again, all this is very blurry. I think we called maybe that same day. They told me I could come the next day. But they did say, we don't have a detox. We're just a treatment center. So, you know, you need to be sober before you come here because we can't detox you.
Right.
And so my dad had thought he was keeping me like locked up in his house. So he didn't think I was doing drugs. So he thought that I was like fine to just go there.
You can go the next day.
And so again, we get home that night and I'm like, what am I going to do? I thought I was going to go to treatment. So I don't have any more drugs to use because I used them all. So I sneak out in the middle of the night. I go to get drugs, to get high like one last time. It ended up being that my dad and his girlfriend had discovered that I was not there. And it was like a huge panic. And then I got scared and I turned off my phone. My dad was like sharing Facebook posts being like, my daughter's missing. It was really crazy. I was mostly scared of my dad's reaction. I was like, he's just going to kill me. I don't even want to face him. I ended up, I have a really good relationship with my dad's girlfriend. Mm-hmm. I think she's awesome. And I was not scared of her. So I was like, can you come and pick me up? And I'll go. But like, I want you to come and pick me up, not my dad. Like, I don't want, and I don't want cops here with you. Like, I just, I'm going to come to you. Yeah. I will come to you, come to this street. I'll walk over. And she did. And my dad, I remember when I saw my dad, he was like, what are we going to do? You have to be sober to go there and yada, yada. And I was like, we'll just pretend, like, you know, which didn't work out that way. I walked in and the, like, he still brought me there, my dad. I don't know. He was, you know, just wanted me somewhere safe. He wanted this over. He brought me there. And they were like, you know.
They knew.
Yeah. So I saved drugs with me for the ride up. And like, when I knew we were getting close, I'm like looking at the GPS. I asked if we could go to the bathroom. And I did my one last shot of heroin before I went there. So I was, I was not sober at all. And, you know, they told me they have to send me to detox first and then I can come back when I'm done. So my dad had to drive me back down to Mass. I had to go to detox in Mass for a week.
They saved you bed at Green Mountain?
Green
Mountain.
For a week after, And that is when I just like let go of everything. I was just like, we're doing this. We're here. I remember I have never detoxed without medication, the Suboxone, and like they give you other stuff. I don't know exactly what it is, but I had never not detoxed with medication. And I remember going in there and I was just like, I don't want anything. I don't want anything because they give you the Suboxone and then you have to like withdraw from the Suboxone. You know what I mean? So it's like, I don't want anything. Yeah. I want to be done. Like I detoxed without any medication to help me. I just did it. And then I was off to Green Mountain.
So that was your aha moment then.
Yeah.
The enough's enough.
Yeah.
Dad's postings, everything.
Yeah. And I think I was just done and I was like, I don't want medication. I just want to be done. Like, let's just do it.
That's great. We'd like to take this time to thank our sponsors. Tasker Funeral Home, located at 621 Central Ave in Dover. Phone number is 603-742-4961. As well as Grondin Funeral Home, 177 North Main Street in Rochester, 603-332-1563. And last but not least, McIntyre McCooey Funeral Home at 301 Main Street, South Berwick, Maine, 207-384-2373. We'd also like to thank our other sponsor, Jeff Big Daddy Goss, owner of the Clipper Tavern at 75 Pleasant Street, Portsmouth, where you'll find the Mac Daddy, my personal favorite. Also, Jitto's Super Steak Sub Shop at 3131 Lafayette Road, where you'll find the Steak, Egg, and Cheese Sandwich as my personal favorite there also. And then the Sweet Spot, Cape Natick Country Club, where you're going to find the best coconut margarita on the planet. Thank you to our sponsors. So you're there.
Yeah.
And I kind of went through everything that they have. So no drugs or alcohol use, no cell phones or electronic devices, attendance at all meetings and therapy sessions, and participation in the basic chores. Not to mention that daily structure that they put in there as well. What made, do you think it was the right program at the right time, or is it the right mindset of Paige? And the right program. Do you know what I mean?
You absolutely have to have the right, the right mindset of me, for sure. If I had gone in there not ready, I think it would have looked very different.
Yeah.
I will say, so when I was in the detox center, I had lost my grandmother. She had passed away while I was there.
And they can't come get you, right?
You're there.
Yeah.
And I think that was like a really tough loss for me and a tough realization of my actions and the time that I had lost with her due to what I was doing. So I think that also altered a lot that was going on in my mind.
Yeah. So with that, is there stuff that you lean on today that kind of helps you be the Paige that you want to be?
Yeah.
Or that you are. Do you know what I'm saying?
I have a relationship with God today, so I lean on that. I lean on my fiance. I lean on my mom, my dad, my sister, my close friends. But I would say for Green Mountain,
let's give them some
it was strict credit. Too. So I got there and I was used to like the rehab in Florida, you were allowed phones at like nighttime. It was super lean. You know, there was a pool. Yeah. You didn't really do much. There was like massages and all that. Keene, there was like some work, but nothing crazy. And then Green Mountain was like, it was so strict. There was morning meditation at like way earlier than I was
normal. It's before your breakfast. I read that.
First thing when you wake up, morning meditation.
Yep.
You have to arrive to everything like early. If you're on time, you're late, which my dad did teach me that. So I knew that. But you have to arrive early. And before arriving to morning meditation, you have to have your bed made and your like little cabin cleaned up. So you're waking up early, you're going to morning meditation, you know, you're going to breakfast. It was a strict, like, boys and girls separated. Mm-hmm. You're not even allowed to, like, make eye contact with them. You can get in trouble.
Yeah, I did leave out that no romantic relationships as part of the...
Which I think is very important in early recovery. And we can talk about that later, because I didn't follow that. But anyways... Yeah, that's important. Boys and girls separated at treatment, in my opinion, is very important. You want to, again, if you can't get outside of yourself with drugs and alcohol, you're going to like seek relationships and stuff like that to make yourself feel better when the drugs and alcohol are gone. So I think it's very important to keep it separate, to stay focused.
Yeah.
So there was that. We had like morning meeting, and if you saw something like someone doing something that you didn't like or they weren't cleaning up, you had to like literally call out these people and be like, hey, Daryl, when you do this, I feel, you know, like, and let people know. It was very strict.
So there's a much higher degree of accountability at Green Mountain than maybe the other facilities?
Yeah, way more.
Okay. And is part of why you think the relationship piece is because you're there for a bigger reason. You're there to save yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that part of why you think that that's so critical is...
Yeah. You need to... Yeah. You're focused demarcation on one thing. Point. Yeah. You need to be focused on one thing and one thing only. But that was the first time I'd had like been introduced to the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and like the 12 steps.
Okay.
In detail. Like I had been to meetings before. I had like heard the 12 steps. I had, you know, been to plenty of meetings and experienced that, but not in the detail that they do there. Like every group throughout the day is basically reading you through the big book and talking through the big book and explaining the big book, which I think that's what I needed. For me, that was the only thing that worked. So, but yeah, really strict. It ended up being really great.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I had just let go of that control. Like I was here to do, like I knew what I wanted to do. I was starting to think clearly. I made the decision while I was there because I was on like antidepressants, nothing that was mind altering, but still I was feeling so good working on myself and fixing these problems that I was like, I don't want anything altering my mind. I just like, I think I can work on these. I think I made myself depressed with the drugs and the alcohol. So that was another really cool thing that happened, was like I was just free of everything and content and happy and learning how to love myself, which I think is what I lacked in the future. I mean,
in the past.
In the past.
Yeah.
I just learned so much there. It was...
You had a hell of a year, kid.
Yeah. So that was all within like not even a year. Yeah. Really.
I couldn't be happier for you.
Thank
I couldn't
you.
Be happier for your parents. I couldn't be happier for anyone that is aware of your situation. I mean, because I'd rather be talking to you about a recovery than, and I don't want to get a woe is me kind of thing, but what I'm trying to say is one of the tougher aspects of my gig is talking to someone's parents that lost somebody.
Yeah.
And it happens way too frequently
mm-hmm.
in this line of work. So this is like, I'm sitting there and I just love your father to death. Mm-hmm. And it would have been pained me to have that conversation. I'd much rather be talking to you than your dad, if that makes any sense in a warped way, you know? So, and I know he'll get it.
Yeah.
You know, no, he'll get one. So I guess my question is this then, did that recovery, the aha moments, did that go smooth for you? Did you struggle with certain things other than the structure? And how did you handle not having a phone for 28, 30 days?
It was really nice, like, after getting some, you know, clarity. It was like, it was a really great group of girls that I was in there with. We all got along really well. We were really busy with the structure of the treatment center.
It's a full day.
Yeah. So no, that didn't bother me at the time.
Good. One of the things I'd like to ask is, how do you maintain all the hard work you've put in? How do you maintain that today? Now, I know this is a great story. Two kids?
Yeah.
Fiance?
Yeah.
Licensed plumber. Is this the page you saw at 12? You're resuming your dreams, I think, in a way of what?
Yeah.
You know?
So after I left Green Mountain, shortly after that is when I met Leon, who's my fiance now.
Yeah.
And again, kind of bringing some control back, right? Like, I kind of knew it wasn't like a good idea to get into a relationship and early recovery, but it was like me seeking, you know, something outside of the drugs and alcohol. And I would say, I mean, it's like a dangerous thing. People don't really make it that often, regardless. Unfortunately, the numbers are super low for success in recovery, but I feel like the success numbers drop greatly when you're in a relationship in early recovery. So I'm sure that scared a lot of people. I ended up getting kicked out of my sober house because of seeing him, and it was just a mess. Again, just me bringing that control back.
So were they kicking you out because of the relationship?
Yeah.
Not
because of using.
Okay.
No. Yeah. I've been sober since Green Mountain.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Which was August 24th, 2016 is my sober
date. That's awesome. That's so friggin' great.
So not because of using, but again, just taking that control back, not listening to the house rules, stuff like that. And it was a bad idea in the sense that I got away from the step work, the meetings, the writing my inventory, which is one of the steps in Alcoholics Anonymous, a very important one. And I had gotten away from that for a few months. I was still sober, again, sober since Green Mountain, but I definitely felt a difference in like my happiness and stuff like that. So I got back into it though. You know, I had the right tools. I had the right people around me. He's also in recovery. So we were both just like, hey, let's go to more meetings, stuff like that. So yeah, I think the Alcoholics Anonymous meetings for me and a lot of people I know with success are very important. For me, it was really important in early recovery, like every single day, raising your hand to speak, even though I hated speaking at meetings, doing things that made me uncomfortable to grow. Yeah. So for my early recovery, meetings were incredibly important. The step work, incredibly important. I ended up sponsoring women when I had gone through the work. So I was able to help them through the steps, a really cool thing. Yeah, without those meetings and early recovery, I don't think I'd be where I am today and doing the work that I did. And then, so 2 years in, I had my daughter. Mm-hmm. And that's around the time of that video that you saw.
Yeah.
And at that point, I was just like really busy with being a mom and I was missing out on the meetings. I was still sponsoring women, but the meetings just became a lot less and less. And then I would go to a meeting like once a week and it just dwindled down from there for me, which for some people might not work and might be dangerous. But I think in those first 2 years, I had done what I needed to do and enough of what I needed to do that I was kind of set up for success within myself. So today I don't to maintain my, it's so weird to me because like, this is off topic, but a little bit. Jody was talking to me last night because she asked me for the video and she's just like, I'm just so proud of you.
Did we love she tell you, you why she was looking for it?
Yeah, to send to you. And it's at this point, it's not weird that people say that to me, but it's just, it's like second nature at this point in my recovery. And I know it's not like that for everyone. You know, people go to meetings people who have been sober for 8 years are still going to multiple meetings a week, and that's what works for them. But to me, it's at this point, it's just like, I'm just sober. Like, this is my life. This is, I'm not struggling in the morning to figure out how I'm going to get high today. It's just, my life is, I'm a mom, I'm a fiance. Yeah. Like, that's what I am today.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's awesome. You're chasing two now, right?
Yeah.
You're chasing two now.
Yeah. And that's just, I don't know. That's just how it is for me. Some people, like I said, some people need the meetings, go to the meetings. And I need to make this very clear that those were so important in the beginning for me.
Yeah. You're not pushing them aside, but it's almost like not knowing enough about the program. I would probably dare say that you've got so much positivity in your world right now. You're still aware of it. That's the key.
Yeah.
You're still navigating the waters, but you know it's a different page than it was.
Yeah. And if someone asks me
prior to the 24th of August.
And if someone asks me to go to a meeting, I'm more than happy to go.
By virtue of sponsoring people too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But going on my own, no. At the end of the day, when I put the kids to sleep, I'm like, I'm not going out to go to a meeting. No. So that's what I do today. I'm in therapy today.
Yeah.
So I have a therapist that I was speaking to, every 2 weeks. We did push it out recently to once a month. So once a month I'm talking to a therapist. I continue to just be a good person every day, which is helpful. Yeah.
I think you're always a good person. It's just that, you know what I mean?
But you know, I'm not lying, being honest, being on time, doing my best to be the best mom that I can be.
What advice or direction would you say to anybody that may be going through what you went through, kid?
I would say that it sucks in the beginning. It sucks a lot to figure out how to be okay without drugs or alcohol.
Yeah.
But it gets better, and it just continues to get better. And like, for me, it hasn't stopped. Every year it gets better and better. Mm. And the blessings get like greater and greater. And yeah.
So you're 8 years now.
8 years, yeah.
That's awesome.
So August 24th, I celebrated 8 years. Yeah. It's crazy. And my life today is just like worlds different than what it was.
Yeah.
I mean, even 6 years ago when I was still sober, it's lifetimes different, but I never thought this life was possible for me at all.
Yeah.
Like, we go back to that conversation I was having with my aunt the day before she brought me to Keene, and I had, like, I could have never pictured this.
Right.
Ever.
And that's just, and then we're talking 6 months prior to you going to
Green Mountain. Green Mountain. Yeah.
Wow. What else can we get out there for people? Page.
I would say for parents, don't try to push it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I don't think there's anything that you can do until that person is ready.
Yeah.
And I think that obviously the end result is beautiful when they are ready.
Right.
I don't know.
I don't want to paraphrase it, so correct me if I'm wrong. You're not blaming anybody.
No.
This was a pure internal choice that Paige made, but you also... You made the choice to continue to be that person you wanted to be before the use.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely made the choice. And then it just took over, you know?
Yeah.
And then when I wanted to stop, I couldn't.
Yeah. I don't even really want to end this conversation just because it's you don't get a lot of happy endings nowadays.
The percentage of success in recovery is very low. It's very sad.
And with your brutal honesty on it, because I did go back through on your Facebook, and you were very honest with it. And I think that that's another thing that you should be proud of.
Yeah.
You know, you're helping people, and that's why I want to kind of get your story out there. Because to your point, we save one other person. Okay, that success rate may go up a little bit.
Yeah.
So I can't thank you enough for coming in.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. This concludes this episode of Frankly Speaking. I think the fact is that we have a young lady that has completely turned it around. Her perseverance overcome many personal choices that she made, and I just couldn't be more honored to have her on this program. And we look for great things from you, Paige, and I look forward to continue to hear, see the smile on Dad's face and Mom's face too. So thank you for coming.
Yes, thank you for having me.
All right, take care.
What was the food situation like?
Where? Which
like
one?
Any of the three of them. I have some weird thing about food. So my first thought's always like, would I be able to like eat anything and survive at places like that? Like, was it like a set menu or could you like buffet style?
I think the one that I went to in Florida, the really nice one, I think that was buffet style. And then I'm pretty sure
in that either there's like free reign at all.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure Keen, it was like we made our own food. Like it was, but we all ate together. It was not good food. And then Green Mountain, it was good food. Again, I think it was a buffet style food.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome.